Hello, I'm Eric Alstrom, Head of Conservation Preservation. I'd like to welcome you to the MSU Libraries tonight for our ongoing colloquial lecture series. Tonight we have Karen Hanmer, noted book artist and fine binder from Chicago. Karen began her career in 1997 and joins us as our 2015 Residential College in the Arts and Humanities Visiting Artist. Her visit here is co-sponsored by both the libraries and the RCH. And I could tell you much more about Karen, but I'm going to let her do that in her own words. So without further ado, Karen Hanmer.
Thanks, Eric, and thank you, Eric and Anita, for inviting me. And thank you, everyone, for coming. I know some of you are actually here by choice, and I really appreciate you coming, too. So I'll begin with how I got started making art and how I made the shift to books. My family wasn't particularly interested in the arts. The family oil painting hung over the sofa. We had these really fabulous bullfight prints over the mantle. But most of the culture I got was pop culture absorbed through television. Attempts to interest me in the performing arts had limited success. My early interest in photography was primarily in manipulating my father's camera equipment. I loved taking the lenses on and off, playing with the accessories, and fitting everything back into its appointed slot in his camera case. And that does sound like bookbinder behavior, I think. In high school, I took a photography class and set up a darkroom in the basement. And my art career was briefly interrupted while I earned a BA in economics at Northwestern University. On a road trip vacation through Wisconsin, I began a series of photos of farms taken out the car window while my husband drove really fast. He's a cautious guy, so as he came to the buildings, he'd want to slow down because a truck might pull out or something, and that's when I wanted him to speed up or at least go as fast as he was going so that the buildings would be blurred. But I probably have 40 rolls of film of this kind of thing, so we were able to work that out. The images were blurred in a way that conveyed the passage of time. I'd never really been sure what I was looking for when I photographed, but I knew it was more in the realm of a feeling than something I could see through the viewfinder. And this series is the closest I got to that with photography. And though I'm not doing photography anymore except to photograph my books, you will see some of these farm out the window pictures again because I use them in my books still. Family history is a theme I keep returning to. I began working with some old family photographs, photographed some of my mother's possessions, interviewed relatives, wrote down my thoughts, questions, and memories. I wanted to combine several photos into one piece, add text to the photos, and make three-dimensional structures for the work instead of presenting them as framed flat wall pieces. So in May of 1997, I upgraded my computer, spent an afternoon with someone who showed me the basics of Photoshop, and began studying with a bookbinder to learn how to make the structures that were really like cases for hardcover books, but without the pages inside, but I didn't know that then. The work needed to be completed for an exhibit to open that July, so I had a lot to figure out in a short amount of time. With these simple book-like structures, I felt I'd found my artistic voice. I believe that feeling physically can be a key to feeling emotionally, and these pieces were tactile, not only for me while I was working on them, but also for the viewer. I could combine a number of images into one piece, add text. I was able to work with time, narrative, and pacing, and I can't imagine going back to a static row of framed images fixed to the wall. My work weaves together themes of history, technology, personal and cultural memory, and the Midwestern landscape. My studio practice is unusually varied, including small editions of artist books, larger editions of inexpensive multiples, installation, and design binding. And except for the installation, I think there's a good example of the range out here for you to look at after the lecture. The work is informed by early years living among places significant to American history and later watching my engineer father slave over analog spreadsheets at the kitchen table. I grew up absorbing film trips and museum exhibits on science and modern industry today that had not been updated since the 1940s. My liberal arts education gave me the tools to draw connections between the arts, sciences, history, popular culture, and current events. My Night Sky project is a good example of how I work with the same subject matter in a number of different ways, and of my process in researching a topic and turning the research into finished work. I began thinking about the project in 2001 after doing some traveling and realizing that unlike my suburban Chicago neighborhood, some places actually get dark at night, and the stars are visible, the same stars that people have been looking at since the beginning of time. I began looking for quotes about the night sky from across the ages, reading history of astronomy books, books about exploration, navigation, and space travel, and essays and anthologies of poetry about the night sky. Reading all these books, looking for a few eloquent words strung together, was incredibly time-consuming, so I worked on this off and on for several years. Finally, I found some good online sources, and search engines were good enough that I could do that. And suddenly, I had the opposite challenge, way too much information, pages and pages and pages of quotes to sift through. I also found high-resolution digital images of relevant historical illustrations. Meanwhile, I thought about what ancient and modern people might have been seeking when they looked to the stars, and what I might be looking for. Throughout the process, I made a number of models for what the book might become. At least 25. I'd work with placement of text, experiment with which illustrations to use, the color of the background, or in what pattern the books should fold so they could function as a book to be read, a sculpture, and a delightful object to play with. Ultimately, I split the content into two books, both using the same structure of a collection of hinged triangles, and it's this structure that we'll be doing Wednesday night. Is it called the Open Studio? The Open Studio on Wednesday night. Folded to fit inside their dust jacket, the books can be held in the hand and read page by page like a traditional book. Removed from the jacket, the books can be folded into an infinite variety of sculptural shapes or unfolded flat to reference historical astronomical charts or contemporary NASA composite photos. The background of each is a photograph of the Milky Way. Like most of my work, they're inkjet printed. The first book, which I brought for you to see here, it's on the table. Celestial Navigation is a collection of ancient and modern navigational instruments. On the other side, the Milky Way image is overlaid with a 19th century star chart and a poem about looking to the sky to reunite with one's lost love. The companion piece, Star Poems, presents quotes that document response to the night sky across the ages by philosophers, artists, and poets, from Plato, Byron, and Van Gogh to more contemporary writers, scientists, and astronauts. Here the book is shown unfolded and flat. The text is paired with 17th century mythological images of constellation forms and images of early stargazers. Here the book is shown with its dust jacket oriented to be read as a traditional book. A simple installation of inkjet printed panels of Japanese paper sheathed the gallery to further immerse the viewer in the experience of the night sky, frankly, to also cover up these really ugly sliding panels where the gallery owner stored all her studio junk. I've reused the same images of the Milky Ways in the books, the mythological constellation forms, stargazers, and astronomical instruments. My preferred way to exhibit my work is how I showed the night sky pieces, just a couple of books and an installation in a gallery, all created around the same theme, so the viewer can be physically and hopefully intellectually and emotionally immersed in the work, and the content can be experienced in several different ways. Much of my work links the creative process of the artist with that of the inventor, explorer, or scientist through first-person accounts and archival photographs and artifacts. As I researched and developed a series of books on the history of aviation, I felt a kinship with the Wright brothers, them in their bicycle shop's back room and me in my spare bedroom studio, all of us carefully and methodically experimenting and creating and refining prototypes. This book, They All Laughed, uses photos and documents related to the Wright brothers' historic first manned powered flight. The title references a Gershwin song about screwball inventions that have become the foundation of modern society. So it's a flag book, what we're going to be making tomorrow in the class, and it's a structure I've used frequently. A simple accordion spine with small cards attached to alternating faces of each fold. It can be read page by page like a traditional book, or it can be pulled apart to reveal a wide panoramic spread. Complementary or contrasting imagery can be printed on the inside and outside of the spine and covers. And it also makes this really great flapping sound when it's pulled open that I'll show everyone tomorrow. I downloaded the images and documents from the Library of Congress and the National Archives. Destination Moon combines photos of a rocket, the moon from space, and the Earth from the moon with Kennedy's Man on the Moon by the End of the Decade speech and a 1950s pop song about a romantic trip to the moon. The high-resolution images were all downloaded from NASA websites. I was researching another project and came upon photos of women aviation pioneers. The photos are engaging and the women set some impressive records, not just women's firsts, but records across gender lines. The pop-ups bring a sense of vitality and joy to the photos of these women. For the beautiful software project, first I made the installation pieces for an exhibit, then I made books with identical content and identical or similar materials so the work could continue to exist in handheld form after the close of the exhibit. I interviewed software engineers to better understand what they find beautiful or compelling about well-written software and the act of programming. I edited the quotes to 80 characters, the character limit on an old-fashioned computer punch card. I inkjet printed them on 33 by 16 inch accurately scaled up replicas of punch cards. The holes are hand cut with an X-Acto knife. And I brought this one for you to see. It's up here on the table. I was able to find a service in Pennsylvania to key punch the same quotes onto actual computer punch cards for this book version of the installation. I'll read you a few of my favorite quotes from the project about well-written software. Somebody says, akin to good writing, music, poetry, even the arrangement of stars in the sky. And someone else says, elegant, neat, sophisticated, it makes my head swim. Longer quotes are printed on green bar computer paper. The installation version cascaded down the gallery wall. The title, I Remember My First, references interview respondents speaking fondly about their first computer. Another favorite quote from the project, when I see well-written code, I feel the same way you feel when you're a kid and you get the Christmas present you wanted, and that night you fall asleep with it in your hands. And a technical note here, if you bring someone with you to the gallery to photograph your installation, don't say it'll be fun, you can wear whatever you want. It would have been better to have the person here, my husband, wear not sandals and maybe something a little less colorful. A book version of the same content uses the holes at the edges of the pin-fed paper for a Japanese stab binding style sewing. And a technical note, which I'm sure Eric will tell the students in the class, I've scored the pages at the spine back and folded the pages back and forth before sewing, so even though it's this Asian structure made with Western materials, the book opens fully and easily. I became a member of the Guild of Bookworkers a few years after I began making artist books. My fellow guild members, who worked as binders and conservators, led me to develop an appreciation for the more traditional book structures and materials I had initially dismissed as lacking possibilities for my work. I began to study binding with more enthusiasm and to see design binding as an additional way to work with material I'm interested in. It's also a welcome opportunity to do something that doesn't involve heavy use of the computer. I enjoy the challenge of becoming skilled in a craft with a very long tradition. The tight parameters make for an interesting challenge, a predetermined size and shape, the limited palette of materials, and only the two boards individually and together with the spine to communicate my message. I've made design bindings for several science and technology related texts. First, Tracy Kidder's The Soul of a New Machine. The text follows a data general work group in the late 1970s that races to develop a new mainframe computer in 1 year. The strips of green and undyed leather reference green bar computer paper. I translated the title and author into binary encoded ASCII and stamped them onto the leather before covering the book. So, if you were to translate that, it says The Soul of a New Machine and Tracy Kidder, the title and author. While I was researching the Night Sky Project, I rebound one of the history of astronomy books I read. It's covered in vellum, which was once a very common bookbinding material. And by vellum, I mean the animal product, not the drafting film looking, scrapbooking product. Visible underneath the vellum are Tycho Brahe's model of the universe with the planets rotating around the Earth. And Copernicus's model with the planets rotating around the sun. And I've told the positions of the sun and Earth on each diagram in silver. The design of multiple water molecules executed with leather inlays and onlays in a variety of techniques decorates this book of poems on the theme of water. The design for this book of illustrations of butterflies and moss suggests the butterfly effect in chaos theory, when butterfly flapping its wings can have a global effect on future events. I continue to find inspiration in the Cold War, an undercurrent of my childhood that still echoes for me in the rhetoric of the war on terrorism. My design for Tom Wolfe's The Right Stuff is inspired by Wolfe's notion of single combat warriors battling the Cold War in the heavens on behalf of the United States and Soviet Union. Further inspiration is drawn from space-themed advertising of the era. Various patriotic and space race icons from both nations are portrayed as constellations, planets, and spacecraft. I often work in pairs in my designs, so here we have Sputnik and a Mercury capsule, the American Eagle and the Soviet Bear, and the American astronaut versus the archaic Russian warrior. This binding of Oppenheimer is Watching Me by Iowa writer Jeff Porter is inspired by the author's vignettes of growing up during the Cold War, both the paranoia of nuclear attack and playful pop culture atomic references. On the inside of the book, at the front and rear, executed in cheerful period colors, a hint of the unthinkable as the atom deconstructs. It does look very cheerful, doesn't it? In the classic post-apocalyptic science fiction novel, A Canticle for Leibowitz, a monk discovers and makes an illuminated copy of a relic left by the order's founder centuries before, an engineering blueprint for a circuit design. Here, I've abstracted a circuit diagram and stamped it into the leather of a 9th century style Coptic binding. My earliest artist books were very closely tied to my family history. For years, I recorded family stories and my childhood memories. I printed out each on an index card to sort through when I was looking for text for various books I was working on. It struck me that they were like really odd trading cards. The Famopoly board game evolved from this idea. Players are members of a family, mother, father, brother, and sister. They roll dice and move about the board, collecting and reading aloud cards printed with childhood stories. My military family moved often while I was growing up. By the time I was 10, I lived in 6 cities. When a player of Famopoly lands on the moving day space, she must spin the wheel and relocate her piece to a different space on the game board. She then loses a turn. This minor inconvenience is intended to give players a small indication of how disruptive and disorienting all that moving around felt. I exhibit the game in a living room-like setting so viewers will have a comfortable place to spend time playing the game. And it's really satisfying to go into the gallery and see that people are, in fact, sitting on the floor around the table and enjoying playing the game. When I was making the game, I'd test prototypes by playing the game with friends, and I'd refine the game based on their feedback. I wanted it to function smoothly, and I wanted it to be fun to play. This research suggested that I should assign point values to the cards that players collected to make the game more competitive. I learned from this research that it's more fun to play when there's a chance to win, and it's even more fun to play when there's a chance for your friends to lose. Decoration documents the accomplishments and values of a mid-century husband and wife. The title, Decoration, alludes both to being decorated with medals for military service and to dressing up with fancy clothing and accessories. It's always bothered me that my mother's obituary said almost nothing for her 46 years, just that she graduated from high school and moved away from the area. I've used images of her belongings to represent what she accomplished and what was important to her. These images are presented alongside and is comparable to the more public awards my father received. Reunion is a companion piece to decoration. I began it shortly after the death of my father. My mother predeceased him by 34 years. I'm intrigued with the idea that they're now reunited, at least figuratively, and who knows, perhaps in a more tangible form. So vintage photographs and brief texts document the couple's many separations and ultimate reunion. The photographs opposite the text on each page spread have a flap that can be moved to show the couple either separated or reunited. Crossing the Divide is a very minimal installation version of reunion. The viewer stands in the space created as photographs of a man and woman address each other across a chasm. My mother is one of 9 children from a Minnesota farming family. Homestead presents photos of milestones in the family over a 60-year span. It's in the format of a scroll 240 inches long, 12 inches visible at a time. The 24 scenes are separated by black vertical lines. Some people have told me they think the lines reference film, which is great, but for me, the black lines are simply a device to disguise the many pieces of paper I had to join together to complete the piece. The text of Bequest outlines a brief history of the farming family, beginning with my grandparents' immigration to the United States and their decision to leave their factory jobs and become farmers. It also lists the names of 2 generations of descendants. Section 19, Township 104, Range 28 is an installation version of Bequest. The text is screen printed on the 30 fabric panels that list the legal description of the family farm plus the names of the owners and their descendants. As the viewer walks between the rows, They're walking the boundaries of the farm and surveying the crops in the form of the wheat, also printed on each panel, and also figuratively as they read the names of the family's 9 children, 50 grandchildren, and numerous great-grandchildren. Here's a detail showing the text and wheat printed on several of the panels. The fabric and printing become more opaque as the rows move from front to back. The final row of fabric is printed with a dense field of wheat. So you might have noticed already my reuse of the farm out the window photos and some of my pieces, and I use them here again in Mirage. And MSU happens to own a copy of Mirage. Thank you, Peter. So it's on the table up there for you to look at after the talk. This piece began as a way to use up failed 16 by 20 inch inkjet prints left over from an earlier project as the raw material for a model of drum leaf binding. I had intended just to make a model of the book structure only, not a work of art with content, but I was too cheap to use new paper, so I used these failed prints that I didn't seem to be able to throw away. I cut a stack of the prints into quarters, sequenced the blurred photos into a journey across a Midwestern landscape of both space and time. I liked the results and got a lot of positive feedback on the content. So for this large edition, I make 8 or 10 books at a time, beginning the same way, starting with a large stack of prints. I cut them into quarters and arrange them into sequences, so each book of the edition is a little different. While I was working on the farm project, I read a lot of fiction and nonfiction about homesteading and the farming life. A few years later, I bound one of those books for a competition, a copy of Willa Cather's My Antonia. In the text, Cather frequently mentions the tall native prairie grass, sometimes through a veil of blinding sun or whirling snow. I reused the prairie grass installation for this artist's book and included this quote from My Antonia. Everywhere, as far as the eye could reach, there was nothing but rough, shaggy red grass. And there was so much motion in it, the whole country seemed somehow to be running. Hardscrabble is the memoir of Texas author John Graves' experiences on his farm, the history of the area, and his efforts to rehabilitate the depleted land. The design is inspired by topographic maps, satellite photos, and the author's sketch of his farm from the text. I bound this for an exhibit at the Kentucky Museum of Art and Craft celebrating the state's writers. The light-to-dark progression references the spiritual journey, conversion experience, and upward orientation of many of the images in this book of black-and-white photographs of Kentucky writer and monk Thomas Merton by Kentucky photographer Ralph Eugene Meatyard. The horizontal bars represent the structure of monastic life, and their undulation represents both the rolling Kentucky landscape and the motion ubiquitous in Meatyard's work. The 7 bars reference the title of Merton's first and best-known published work, The 7-Story Mountain. A Thousand Acres by Jane Smiley is a retelling of King Lear on an Iowa farm. She speaks very poetically about the land. I've made a design showing both abstracted aerial and cross-section views of cultivated land. The quadrants represent Lear and his 3 daughters. The titling runs across the horizon line. I found the Bush years very inspiring. America's Most Wanted Black Gold Texas Tea was inspired by decks of playing cards portraying villains and heroes from Operation Iraqi Freedom. I was appalled, but at the same time thought, they've created this really great artist book and they don't even realize it. So my deck of cards pictures 52 different sport utility vehicles, challenging the claim that the war wasn't about oil. Patriot Alphabet was inspired by the Patriot Act. The text is taken from the vocabulary of terrorism, homeland security, and the Iraq War. Some pages contain a faint image of a cowboy. The covers picture the crying eagle atop an American flag. At some point, I realized that to become both a better binder and a better bookbinding instructor, I'd need a deeper understanding of the engineering of the book. This quest has led to additional study, making numerous structure models, and much written documentation of my procedures. I've also learned a lot from teaching, having to describe rounding, backing, pairing, and other basic skills in great detail and troubleshoot the students' difficulties has forced me to look much more carefully at what I'm doing and why. My most recent artist books reflect my deepening interest in binding, referencing 19th century decoration or structure, and sometimes specific notable publications of the period. I wondered if I'd have anything to say about current events after the 2008 election. Then I began to notice that the three of the huge new houses on my street had been vacant for a long time and were in foreclosure. One day a service came to cut the knee-high grass in the yard next door and pump 8 feet of water out of the basement. The model architect, the Panic of 09, is based on the model architect, Samuel Sloan's 1852 collection of grandiose house plans and instructions to contractors. The new work pairs historical text and illustrations from Sloan's work with contemporary text from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's online guide to avoiding foreclosure. The book is bound using the drum leaf structure, but is evocative of a mid-19th century binding in its use of materials and decorative elements, the leather spine, the marbled paper, decorated edge, and gold tooling. The large page size mirrors that of Sloan's work. In the colophon, I note that Samuel Sloan's The Model Architect was published at the midpoint of a century marked by cycles of rampant speculation, followed by financial collapse. Not unlike the recent cycle that's wreaked havoc with the real estate in my neighborhood and with the global economy. And a big thank you to Eric Ahlstrom, who I called when I was working on this. What's a 19th century book supposed to look like? What's the edge decoration supposed to look like? And so forth. Thanks, Eric. I first created Never More Again, Poe Exhumed, for a Halloween-themed exhibit. In doing my research for A Binding of the Raven, I'd noticed how closely current events mirror tales written by Edgar Allan Poe over 150 years ago. Nevermore Again, Poe Exhumed pairs 12 Poe stories with equally spine-tingling stories from the news. The premature burial and the struggling economy, the balloon hoax and the hunt for weapons of mass destruction, a tale of the ragged mountains and politicians' dalliances in the Appalachian mountains and beyond, William Wilson and genetically modified food, the black cat and the bravado of a former Illinois governor, and the man that was used up and the meteoric rise of a former Alaska governor. I enjoyed the research into styles I did for The Model Architect and went even further with Nevermore Again. The typography and design for this book are based on the first edition of Poe's first published work, Tamerlane and Other Poems. Only 12 copies of this modest pamphlet are known to exist of the 50 printed in Boston in 1827. So the standard edition, and there's one over there that Michigan State owns. The standard edition is presented in a paper wrapper. The construction is based on the first edition of Tamerlane, except mine's sewn through the spine folds, so it opens. The deluxe edition is presented in early 19th century style publisher's binding. So on the left is an image of my work, and on the right is an image of Tamerlane from the University of Chicago Library Special Collections Research Center. And it was really fun making up the fake advertising for the rear of my book. So, a few page spreads. I'm also becoming interested in more modest binding structures. Here, I've used Julia Miller's research into colonial American scaleboard bindings as a jumping-off point for expressive use of materials in this binding of a facsimile of an early 18th-century pamphlet about sin, the snakeskin spine in green wooden boards referencing the serpent in the Garden of Eden. John Demeritt's technique elevates the German case binding to something appropriate for an exhibition piece. Here, I've played with titling to reflect the bilingual nature of the text. It's an interview with a book collector and a bookbinder. For an earlier project, I rebound a number of romance novels with designs appropriate to their titles, such as Wanton Splendor, Rapture's Rage, and Sweet Silken Bondage. Random Passions features couples from my collection of romance novel covers traced onto translucent paper and layered together so multiple new pairings can emerge. The pamphlet's case is covered in red velveteen book cloth. Pride, Prejudice, Passion is a series of three sculptural works pairing text from the archetypal 1813 romance novel by Jane Austen with images cut from the covers of its modern counterparts. The titles reference ubiquitous artist book structures. So this is the Jacob's Ladder, Head Over Heels, a carousel book called Whirlwind Romance, and a tunnel of book called Tunnel of Love. Do you remember the oil painting from above my childhood sofa in the second slide? Here it is again. Photographed, digitally printed, actual size, deconstructed and bound using the drum leaf structure. The title is stamped in gold foil on a vellum spine. When this view of the island of Capri overlooking the Gulf of Naples is divided into eight equal portions, each portion still reads as a horizon. A fragmented walk through the landscape may also function as a metaphor for memory and the unanswered questions that elude memory. Oops. The pocket-sized format of Fragments of Capri references travel guidebooks. What importance does a painting hold when it's the only work of art a family owns? What role does that painting play in one's consciousness when it's become so familiar it's an unnoticed part of the household landscape? What clues about the family's history might the painting hold? Where, when, why was it acquired? Or maybe to paraphrase Freud, sometimes a painting is just oil on canvas. And this now hangs above the bed in our guest room. So I'll end where I began with my dubious cultural influences. Deal Me and Mona contrast two cornerstones of Western high art and low art, the Mona Lisa and Cassius Coolidge's Poker Dog's painting, Waterloo. That's it. So there's work here to look at. You can ask me questions now or informally, and I believe there are snacks.
Please keep the snacks back there and away from the books.
Yes.
Karen, I want to ask a question about the pairing of
The pairing of the installations with the books, particularly the one with the celestial.
Mm-hmm.
When you made those panels, are those printed on a huge digital printer, or how did you get those images on those panels? And what's the fabric on the panels?
So it's paper, and my printer prints 17 inches wide, and as long as I want it to print.
That's the key.
Yeah, the first thing I did like that was those two people, kind of looking at each other, and I tried to do it on fabric, and it wasn't clear if I needed to do something to fix it after I printed on it, and I would print and throw away, and print and throw away, and print and throw away. But I already know how to print on paper, right? So I got just long rolls of Japanese paper or some really long pieces of nice Japanese paper and used that and didn't have any problem. Yes, Pat.
I understand you recently got your diploma from the American Academy of Bookbinding. Could you tell us a little bit about what it took to get that?
Sure. It's yeah, it's a series of two-week workshops. It's in Telluride, Colorado. The school, I believe, correct me if this isn't right, Eric, started as something to entertain children of people who had summer homes there or vacation homes there, but then they added a bookbinding school. So some people who start are beginners, some people have more experience when they begin, so you take basically the same bookbinding class over and over and over again until you get the nod that it's time to prepare a few fancy books to be evaluated. And they say that it would take 5 years, but not many people have completed the program. And I think part of that is it's kind of fun to go there and take the class and be with your friends for the 2 weeks every year. And not as many people have enthusiasm about doing fancy books during the year and working really hard and sending them to be evaluated. But for those of us who have to get their education from workshops, there are weekend workshops, and not very many advanced level weekend workshops, so it was a real luxury and privilege and expense to take these classes that were 2 weeks long and really have some time not just to mimic what the instructor did, but think about what I was doing and why. Does that answer your question? And if perhaps someone has something they want to talk to me about without the microphone and everything, so we could do that. Yes, Eric.
You talked about the Celestial books. It seemed like it was a multi-year process from your initial idea to when you actually did that. Is that what happened with other books, too, where it takes a long time for the idea to develop and form?
No, just this one, because it wasn't clear where to get the text. So when I started, search engines weren't as good. So I was reading entire books. I don't have a problem with reading, but to find just the right words strung together, I read lots of books. And I put it aside for a while. Then when I picked it up again, I could just search for night sky poems and star quotes. And
with that book, you also said you made many models.
Yes.
Is that most of
your books? Oh, yes. Yes, maybe not quite that many, but yes. I have a whole box for Nevermore Again also with different materials and structures, and it was really important to me that the paper felt like old paper, so I tried lots and lots of things, and part of that was I was being stubborn. I didn't want to spring for the expensive paper, the handmade paper, but you know, other paper doesn't feel like nice paper or behave like it. Even the most recent one that you have, box full of models for that, trying to get the structure right, what kind of paper. I thought maybe it'd be a drum leaf. But no. Yeah. What about you?
Models are very important.
So the bicycle one, for instance, how many models do you think you made?
That one was fairly simple. There's just a few of them, but it gets printed out on plain old paper. You know, it's going to work together before you bring for the expensive stuff.
Yeah, or sometimes it'll be on plain paper and it'll be blank and there'll be post-its and I'll take them on and off when I'm trying to work out how the text goes. So I assume you did that to prove some kind of point to the students in the class.
Yes, I hope you all have models and notebooks and models. And actually, the post-it notes is a good idea. Because that way, if you write it on a post-it note and stick it on the model, and you decide you don't want it as page 5, you want it as page 8, then you just peel off the post-it note.
And then the sticky stuff on the post-it note gets exhausted, so then I switch to blue tape.
But I was rather astounded at 25 over
30 years. Yeah, that one was complicated. For the pattern it folds in, too.
Do most of your books get printed inkjet, or do you use other technologies in this format?
One was printed laser that was sent out, and it was key punched. I can't think of anything right now that I've done another way.
What causes you to want to create a installation, an art installation, or an exhibit for a book? Does that come from, do people reach out to you who are interested in it? Are you sort of like more passionate about some that you see in an art installation? Like, you see the opportunity to take what you made and create an art installation out of it?
I wouldn't make an installation unless there was a date set for an exhibit. I wouldn't make that first, then figure out where to put it. Because it would be a certain, it'd have to be sized for the room. I'd have to think about, is it practical for me to move this thing across the country, or is it something I need to drive to the place and so forth. Oh, sure.
If you did it in the slideshow, I apologize.
I didn't. So this is called a girdle book. I'm not. It's so it really is like the medieval. I may handle these, correct? So it's a medieval binding that's just covered, typical medieval binding that's just covered a little differently. They would girdle, meaning belt, so they would attach it to their belt, and they could fight demons with one hand. There are a lot of paintings and engravings and so forth of people with belts like this. So it would be a fashion accessory also, and I could just walk around in the garden and read and put it back. So this comes from the bottom, from the tail rather than the head. There's, in terms of bookbinding workshops, there seem to be things that fall in and out of fashion, like lapels or skirt lengths or something. And this might be the thing that people are interested in for a while, and then now that I'm talking to you all, my mind is blank, but if I was at home, I could think of many fads. Oh, the secret Belgian binding. It helps to have a catchy name.
Any other questions? If you'd like to come up, you can take a look at the books, so that we make sure your hands are clean.
No touching.
Okay. So I guess if you'd like to touch, ask a parent or one of your
Part of us will be up there.